Sinn Féin, the Ulster Unionist Party, the SDLP, the Alliance Party, the Green Party, TUV, Freight NI, the Federation of Small Business, Manufacturing NI, Retail NI, the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, the CBI, every one of them against the DUP's proposals for Brexit in Northern Ireland. And in addition, the man the DUP trusted with economy, their top man in finance, the former MLA Simon Hamilton, top man until recently, he left the party, says the following: "We are deeply concerned that these proposals run the risk of increasing the cost of doing business with the EU and seriously disrupt vital supply chains. So Boris Johnson's proposals, which the DUP are backing, their former top man in finance is worried that they will seriously disrupt vital supply chains." And yet, the DUP stand firm that this is the best way forward, this All-Ireland Economic Zone is the best way forward for Northern Ireland. Let's talk to some businesses this morning. Declan Billington is Chief Executive of Thompson's, Northern Ireland's largest animal feed producer, and also sits on the board of Northern Ireland Food and Drink. Declan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
The DUP, I guess, are respectfully saying every one of you have got this wrong.
Then they must know something we don't know. If I could summarise our view in the matter, the deal was that Northern Ireland, when the UK leaves Europe, Northern Ireland's economy will not be severely damaged and there'll no return to a no hard border. To solve those three problems, there's three tests that need to be made. Now, there are no checks at the border for food safety, and this deal does solve that first problem. The second one is that doesn't achieve very much if a farmer getting 27p for his milk gets 10p for his milk because there's a tax at the border. Effectively, you'll not be able to trade through that border. And there is a gap in the proposal that does not tell us what the tax position is going to be. And unless there's a solution that does not involve taxation at the border, the deal will fail. The third check then is the amount of red tape at the border that will be just too much for small businesses to deal with. It is absolutely horrendous. Depending on how they solve the second one, will determine whether small businesses will not be able to cope with the bureaucracy red tape cost. So as the document sits, it solves one of three problems, but we will fail on either of the other two. And the only question I have is there something still to come on ensuring that there's no taxation in trade on the island? We have aligned the standards. You have to align the taxation on the island so that we can continue to trade into Europe without finding the dairy farmer goes bust in the process, or the beef farmer, or the businesses. So I feel that as it stands alone, it will fail. But the challenge is to kick it to death or to challenge the UK government to fill in the gaps and see if we can arrive at a solution that solves all three of the problems.
As this deal currently stands, and the DUP will remind us that most of our trade, there is more trade that we do with GB than we do with the EU. The vast majority of our trade is with GB compared to the EU. And indeed Ireland, and the DUP say they are protecting that with this deal, which includes an all-Ireland zone.
Yeah, well, that would imply they were given a choice of either or. In Theresa May's deal and in Boris Johnson's deal here, we are granted unfettered access for our trade into GB. So that we've never, in the options that are on the table, been told that our trade with England, Scotland and Wales, our exports to England, Scotland and Wales are under threat. And therefore, we've always considered that is not under threat. So three quarters of our trade is okay. Let's lock down the last quarter.
So in other words, Theresa May's deal would have meant you could have traded with GB, that important part of our economy. You could have traded with it anyway.
The withdrawal agreement uses the word, and the December agreement uses the word unfettered access. The withdrawal agreement, the original Northern Ireland only one, had protections to make absolutely sure that we would continue to trade tomorrow as we did today. And Boris's proposal is that we continue to have unfettered access, that in theory tomorrow we will trade in the same way as we do today in our exports to the mainland. So I struggle to understand why we are made to feel that there's an either-or choice. I consider the UK export market to be in the bag, but we still have a serious issue with the last quarter of our business.
You're the chief executive of Thompson's. Thompson's is Northern Ireland's largest animal feed producer. How many people do you employ?
Employ 167.
Are there jobs in jeopardy because of this deal?
The jobs in my business aren't in jeopardy because of this deal, but my fear is what happens to my customer base. If my customer base, if the farmers struggle and start to go under because they can't trade across the taxation barrier, a third of our milk goes south. We don't have the factories to process it. And the farmer can't survive in Tempe. Where does he go with his milk? A quarter of our meat goes across the border. We lose a quarter of the business. Does our farmers lose a quarter of their business? If my farmers suffer, my business suffers directly. A small part of our business is into Ireland. Indirectly, a huge number of my customers are dependent on this, and if they fail, I'll fail.
And if this deal, as it currently stands, goes through, do you think farmers would go under?
If they do not address the taxation issue, and there's no other support, farmers will suffer, and farmers and businesses will either be the farmers or the businesses that will go under.
Declan, thank you. Good morning to you. Glenn Roberts next, Chief Executive of Retail NI. Morning to you, Glenn.
Good morning, Stephen.
Why are you not supporting this proposal?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons why proposals are a non-starter. I think, firstly, moving from no borders to two borders, having to get the whole regulatory regime renewed every 4 years in an assembly that hasn't met for the last 3 years. And if you're a business and you're trying to plan ahead, a long-term plan ahead, and you've got this uncertainty every 4 years to deal with, it's fundamentally bad for business. So I think that idea certainly has to be challenged. And, see, at this time, we need to be not building more borders, we need to be building bridges. And I think that is why we have major concerns. And I mean, just to add to that list that you read out, start of the programme, you've now got the Ulster Farmers Union that have expressed major concerns with this, and indeed the trade union movement as well. So right across civic society in Northern Ireland, you have organisations that are saying, look, this deal isn't going to work, but you know what, we still need to engage with the government, we still need to work with the DUP on this, but the deal needs major revisions. And I've talked...
Well, they're telling you you've got it wrong. The DUP is telling you you've got it wrong.
Well, I've been talking to members over the last sort of 24 hours since this letter came out, and some of them have expressed the concern that this deal is not a serious deal, that it was designed to fail. So the government can say, well, look, at least we tried. We put this deal out there and you rejected it, and the next move is no deal.
Who told you it's designed to fail?
I think there's a concern. Obviously, you've heard this from some of the political reps, but I've been talking to a number of members, and they
members of what?
Members of Retail I have expressed scepticism that the real agenda here is cover for a no deal. Now, I'm not saying that's not necessarily the case, because we want to engage with the government, we want to work with the DUP. But considering what would happen in the event of a deal, and there's 40,000 reasons why a no deal for Northern Ireland would be bad, because that's the number of jobs projected that we would lose by the Department of Commerce. So we've got to get this right. So, I think the next stage is, we've put publicly our concerns out there, but we need to engage with the government now. And that's something I said to the Secretary of State on Wednesday. I think at the very least he needs to bring a round table around. I'd like to see the Prime Minister come to
Glenn,
Northern Ireland.
Are you not in La La Land? The British government is dealing with the EU. This is their big idea. Those top-level discussions are now happening. It is the DUP who have the most representation in terms of they have the closest link to the British government. They're telling you you've got it wrong. They're telling all of those other organisations you've got it wrong. It's you v them.
I don't see it that way. I see it as a process of engagement. And let's not forget, business, trade unions, the voluntary sector, we're the major stakeholders. We drive this economy here. So we have an absolutely crucial voice in this, as we did in the previous withdrawal day, because, drill all this down. This is about people's jobs. This is about small businesses. This is about lives and livelihoods. And this is what this is
government.
And the DUP would say that they are protecting our biggest market, our trade with Great Britain.
I absolutely understand what they're saying. I think what we need to ensure that we get a deal which gives us full unfettered access, not just to the GB market, but also to the EU single market as well. We need frictionless trade on the island.
Well, that's what the backstop gave, and it was turned down. It was rejected.
Well, I think we've still got to continue to work at this. We've still got to continue to engage with the government. That's why I think it would be good for the Prime Minister to visit Northern Ireland directly, to directly engage with business. We led through trade and I had a delegation, the largest ever business delegation, to visit Westminster and Downing Street, where we had our members in the room engaging with Boris.
Look where that got you.
Well, listen, we were very clear, and our members were very clear, that likewise our colleagues in hospitality, Ulster and manufacturing, their members were saying the same thing as us to the Prime Minister. We absolutely need a deal. And I think what we need to go moving on is find a more effective voice for business and trade unions and the voluntary sector in this process. We were heavily involved in discussions. The last was rolled in. We need to engage on these proposals. Yes, we have serious concerns about them, but I think what we now need to do is engage with the government. There are several queries and questions that I know many other colleagues have. So I think what we need to do and what we need to move on now is, how do we engage? How do we get a better deal? And how do we get a deal that works for the economy, and so that we're not in a position to see anybody lose their jobs as a result of
it? And if this deal that Boris Johnson and the DUP are supporting went through, in the very unlikely event that it went through, and I say it's unlikely because, Stormont, there would need to be, as you well know, consensus at the Assembly, and there isn't even an Assembly, never mind a consensus, and every other political party is against it. But if this deal did somehow go through, what would be the impact, in your view, as the Chief Executive of Retail A&I, on jobs in Northern Ireland?
Well, I think it would have huge issues around north to south tariffs. I think, as has already been said, it would have huge impacts on our farmers, our agri-food sector, our supply chain. It would also, in terms of this four-year renewal, create huge uncertainty. It would be very difficult for businesses to long-term plan because they would have this four-year renewal thing every 4 years. That could result in deadlock. I think Lord Keane made some good points in the House of Lords last night, where he highlighted that this could be something that would utterly divide the Assembly. It could become an orange and green issue, and Brexit is not an orange and green issue. It shouldn't be seen as that. And I think that is the concerns we have. So I think how we move forward in this is that we continue and we step up the engagement. I've spoken to an initial contact with the DUP on the way back from the Tory conference, and I highlighted at that early stage and said, look, much of this proposal will be a non-runner for the business community. And I think
So you told them it was a non-runner, and they've gone with it anyway.
Well, I think what we've got to do is engage the DUP. We've got to listen to their concerns, and they've got to listen to our concerns. So we have a good relationship with the DUP. It shouldn't be this sort of standoff that we maybe have at the minute. We should be engaging, get around the table, and let's see what we can hammer out. And I think the key thing to take away from all this, I'd like to see the Prime Minister come to Northern Ireland and engage directly with the business community, with our farmers, with our trade unions and our voluntary sector, to take questions on this deal, and let's see if we can improve it, get a better deal that works for everyone, works for the UK, Ireland and the EU.
Glenn Roberts, thank you very much indeed. Morning to you. Now, I know that quite a few of you this morning, and if you're not involved in the business sector, remember that if you are employed in Northern Ireland, and that will be the vast majority of you, you have got all of these different organisations saying that this will jeopardise your prosperity. The DUP are saying, actually, it will protect you because our biggest market is with GB. Now, I want to get your views this morning on, is this what you voted for when you voted in the referendum? What do you think should happen next? 03030805555. Malachy in Belfast. Morning, Malachy.
Hi, Stephen. Yeah, I listened to a few last night. It's very interesting. I think people have got to realise just where I think actually Geoffrey Donaldson and the DUP had a big say in this agreement as well. But there's a fundamental flaw in what Geoffrey Donaldson says. And I was 20 years at the freight game going across that border. And this is a fundamental flaw, which I wish somebody would find out. Maybe your show could do it and see what the story is. And I'd love to see where Mr. Anthony Noland, Sammy Wilson is, because he's their spokesman. He's the spokesman for Brexit, and you know,
has Sammy spoken on Brexit yet?
Well, Sammy's
hated over the last 24 hours. Has he actually spoken about this proposal?
Why is he not in your show talking about it? You know, this is one of the biggest decisions in the country, and he hasn't been on any of your shows. He's the biggest presenter in the country, or mentioned it, but he's quite happy to come on and condemn everything that either you or your show stands for. But parking that aside, Jeffrey Donaldson's main argument last night to Mark Carruthers and The View was that he's protecting, I know it's difficult for people to understand this, but he's protecting Northern Ireland's exports into GB, which is a far greater market than it is the Republic of Ireland. Now, and this is very important, if you take the milk that goes from Northern Ireland on a daily basis, millions and millions of pounds worth is processed in the Republic of Ireland, it then comes back into Northern Ireland and is sent to GB for sales to Tesco's and other supermarkets. Now, I don't know what the percentages are myself because I'm not over it, but he's taken that as an export from Northern Ireland into GB. So all that processing is going to finish as soon as Brexit happens, so that milk can't go anywhere. So that export that he's talking about, that he's trying to protect, doesn't exist. So I would like someone to tell me from the business community, of all the exports from Northern Ireland that go into GB, have to go into the Republic of Ireland, should it be computers, should it be car parts, to get components put in or made to go back into products back into Northern Ireland that are then exported to GB. You know what I mean? All them businesses are going to go down the tubes. And his argument is flawed, because, and it's the same with Jim Allister. You know, it's not stuff that's, I don't think there's anything home-based here that goes into GB that doesn't have to go the Republic of some description to be shipped out to Northern Ireland.
In terms of Sammy Wilson, I'm just noticing here that he has been tweeting yesterday. Now, there's a difference between tweeting, of course, and being held accountable by journalists. But Mr. Wilson has said, out of the EU customs union, out of the VAT regime, parallel consent in the Northern Ireland Assembly, he said, required for any divergence, fulfilment of our constant position as set out in paragraph 50. But in terms of when he says parallel consent in the Northern Ireland Assembly required for any divergence, the DUP are making it clear that they back Boris Johnson's proposal this deal. And are the DUP seriously saying, is there even a hint that the DUP would not back an all-Ireland economic zone? Is that where we are? In terms of the single market, something which Arlene Foster said was the DUP's one red line, she said it a year ago. How come that has gone over the hill? How come that has disappeared? And presumably the DUP, we don't know because we can't ask them, but presumably the DUP would argue they're trying to protect our trade with GB. What others might remind the DUP is that with the original Theresa May backstop, we had that unfettered trade with GB already. Bill in Belfast. Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Stephen. Mine is very simple. The DUP is only worried about one thing. That's the union. Nothing else matter. Businesses don't count people's jobs. It's the union. And that's it. Now, as regards...
Is the union safer with an all-Ireland economic zone?
The union is copper-fastened by the Good Friday Agreement that says it only can be changed if the people vote for it to be changed. And we had the Taoiseach not long ago saying he wouldn't entertain unless it was over 60% of the North voted for it. Now, that's copper fastened. This here the DUP's come up with, their fingerprints is all over it. It's to save the union. And they've got it into their head. If Britain gets a bad deal, the Theresa May's deal, they say, was, the union's at risk. And that's farther from the truth. The first caller you had on the business...
Arlene Foster, a year ago, said that it would constitutionally challenge Northern Ireland's place in the UK if there were to be a single market. The DUP are now saying they will be happy to have a single market as long as they can agree to it.
As long as the union's safe. But your first caller spoke great wisdom when he said his business would be okay, but it's the business that he's supplying the farmers and everybody else that he says he's very fearful it'll go to the wall. And the next commentator that on says all the milk we have here will be thrown down the drain. And don't forget, it was the top man in Deal Farm that said there could be as many as 40,000 cattle culled in Northern Ireland. Now, what he failed to say, or didn't want to say, was the majority of them cattle will go into bonfires because we are not allowed to put meat into the market for human consumption.
Well, you know, I have absolutely no idea where you're getting that statement from.
Well, that's from the mad cow disease.
About bonfires.
No
idea at all.
Until the food chain over 3 year old. You'll find out when callers come today. You're not allowed to eat. That's burned. So you have all these people saying this in the DUP. It's the union they're worried about. But what he did say was, the CEO, it's going to be very bad for the milk industry. Now, there's the biggest sale we have with farmers is milk. We have something like 135,000 milk cattle in Northern Ireland. That was what he said. And there's going to have to be a cull and milking down the drain.
What do you think should happen now?
Well, I think we should get Theresa May's deal because it was a brilliant deal. I voted to stay in Europe. You got to keep remembering, Stephen. Northern Ireland voted to stay, not to go. So, her deal was a deal for me.
Thank you. Morning to you. Ian Marshall's the Irish Senator, former Prime Minister, former President of the Ulster Farmers Union. I promoted you there, Ian. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Is there any chance, an iota of a chance, that the Irish government would agree to this proposal as it currently stands?
Well, I think, Stephen, when we look at this proposal that has been tabled, and yeah, your earlier callers, Declan Billington and Glyn Roberts, highlighted this. Everyone in Northern Ireland, all the trade organisations and businesses have rejected it and said it's unworkable, it can't be delivered. That's absolutely no different to what Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney have said yesterday. And this idea that the Irish are being intransigent, where they have a different position, the Irish government actually at the moment are in exactly the same place as the Northern Ireland business fraternity, and in fact 90% of the political representation. So at the minute, as it stands, it's not a case of Irish intransigence or European intransigence. The fact is, this won't work.
Well, why do you think the DUP are pushing it so hard then?
I think that the DUP are under immense pressure because of their confidence in supply. I genuinely believe the DUP's primary concern here is to protect the union, which I understand and agree with them on that. But however, what I would say is that the way that you best protect the Northern Ireland situation and the UK Union is to make Northern Ireland successful. And this deal has the potential to decimate business, to decimate industry, to put Northern Ireland under immense pressure and actually present probably the biggest threat to the union that we've seen in a long time.
Well, how would this be the biggest threat to the union?
Because once you create a situation of tension and friction for trade, remember, we have, at the moment, we have currently got seamless, frictionless trade with both GB markets, with the Republic of Ireland, and with Europe. Once you threaten that and you put extra pressure, extra financial pressure on people and on businesses, you will raise the question about the validity or the sense in remaining within the UK Union. People will start to question whether this is the best situation we're in. So I think what we actually need is to go back to review the situation. Remember, what's happened here, Stephen, in 2016...
Come on, they've been reviewing and reviewing and reviewing. They've been looking at this. This is the best they can come up with.
Well, actually, I would contest that because actually what we started with, we were sold a horse in 2016 and we've got a donkey in 2019. So we decide, do we want to keep the donkey or do we go back and ask the people if you really want the donkey or do you want the horse? Or do we go back and we say, you sold us something, you delivered something different that wasn't deliverable. Therefore, let's review the situation. Let's consider where we are exactly today.
What do you think would be the best outcome? Save those who want another referendum, because clearly those who favour Brexit will not tolerate that. What would be the best outcome now for us to leave the EU? Under what circumstances?
Well, bearing in mind, I don't think leaving makes any sense, and still hasn't been demonstrated what the opportunities are for me 3 years on. But we needed to look at something that works for Northern Ireland to keep the stability in Northern Ireland, both peace and stability, but more importantly, the business and trade that we have with EU and with the GB market. So to do that, we need a model that works in Northern Ireland context. And the term Northern Ireland backstop has now become hugely contentious. I think there needs to be some serious questions asked. For example, are ships that travel on a daily basis from Northern Ireland to GP, the trucks, the vehicles, the cars that go on that are stationary for a couple of hours? You could do checks that you need to in transit without any disruption whatsoever at either end. Would it affect the GB market or the trade? I don't think it would. And I think the important thing that we're missing in this, and Geoffrey Donaldson and the DUP are correct, the gross amount of trade we do, the value of the trade with East-West, with GB, Northern Ireland, is more significant.
And that's their point.
And the North-South trade, however, in terms of the quantity of trade, the volume of trade, the number of transactions, the number of movements and shipments, the freight industry, ask Seamus Lahine, that these guys know that the quantity of that trade, the volume of movement, is much greater North-South. So I don't think you can compare one with the other. Both are equally as important, and it's important that we protect both of those trading arrangements.
OK. Ian Marshall, thank you. Tom Burns. Morning, Tom.
Good morning, Stephen.
Thank you for calling us. Go ahead. Calling us from Belfast.
Basically, the question that has not been asked from what I listened to yesterday and today is, what if the DUP are no longer in charge in 4 years' time? A reversal of fortunes, let us call it, whereby they don't have the sort of majority at Stormont that they have now. So they're agreeing to a deal, which I don't fully comprehend, and I don't think anybody fully comprehends it, with the view that they could literally stand in and say, no, we've decided to opt out of this. But as I say, nobody knows what's happening in politics. Harold Wilson once said, a week in politics is a very long time. So 4 years in politics is an even longer time. One of the aspects of this that I don't think anybody has mentioned is, we keep harping on about Northern Ireland. Why can the whole island of Ireland not have a special relationship with GB as it always had prior to the EU, and still have GB, Northern Ireland, out of the EU, but still have a special relationship within our borders? I think that would be an easier thing to accomplish rather than trying to work out if you're going to have a border on the island of Ireland, etc. Because obviously the Irish Republic is sending the GB, and quite a big proportion of their business is GB. But having said that, they obviously send things to Europe as well. But sure, they have to cross a sea to get it to Europe anyway, or they're going to have to transport through GB to get it to Europe anyway, or in the case of some things, obviously fly. So why not forget about this, all this Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland border, and just say, EU, come up with a simple idea to give Ireland...
A simple idea.
A special circumstances. There's special circumstances in the EU for Switzerland. There's special circumstances for Iceland, from what I'm led to believe. And we know Norway have got a special relationship. And the EU was trying to negotiate a special relationship with Canada. So, you know, why not have a special relationship for the British Isles, which includes the island of Ireland?
Now, Jim Wilson has called the programme. Apparently his mobile phone battery's dying, so we've got to go to him soon. Morning to you, Jim.
Morning, Stephen.
Have you got a problem with your charger?
No, I have a charger last night. It wasn't in right.
Well, you always need to put it in right, Jim. Go ahead.
No, Stephen, I'm just getting a wee bit frustrated. I think that, you know, is the programme about Brexit or is it about DUP bashing? Because I watched your programme the other night on television and you had five people on, and every single one of them was attacking the DUP. Your programme the last two or three days has been constantly people attacking the DUP.
Well, let me deal with that.
Let me deal with that
and then, of course, you can come back.
Oh, OK, but let me finish
well,
with
no,
it, Stephen.
Let me deal with that and then you can, of course, come back. So on Wednesday night, the DUP were invited on, as was every other political party. Every other political party wanted to represent their electorate. The DUP did not. their prerogative. In terms of when you talk about this programme attacking the DUP's position, as we made it clear this morning, and I'll say it again, it's not this programme doing anything like it. It is this programme citing the position of Sinn Féin, the Ulster Unionist Party, the SDLP, the Alliance Party, the Green Party, the TUV, Freight NI, Federation of Small Business, Manufacturing NI, Retail NI, the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, CBI, and now the DUP's former finance minister, Simon Hamilton. So, you know, if we can find people who will support the DUP's position, bring it on. And if you do, tell us why.
Well, Stephen, I'm not on the support or agree with all of
Do you support the DUP's proposal?
Stephen, you asked me to respond and you won't give me a chance to respond.
Do you support the DUP's proposal for an all-Ireland type of single market?
Right, I'm still not sure that it is a great deal for us, but I know that in stuff like that there has to be a compromise. There has to be red lines when someone starts a negotiation, and then them red lines, no matter who it is, them red lines move. You know, but listening to the last two or three days, you know, it just seemed to be just a programme about DUP bashing because of the people and so on. So you're telling me that no one has phoned into your show in support of the DUP in the last two or three days in reference to this?
I'm telling you, you've phoned in.
I'm phoning in for a specific reason,
And we're
Stephen.
Putting you on. So tell me why you think an All-Ireland Economic Zone is good
Stephen,
for the UK.
No, Stephen, that's not why I came onto your show.
Do you think it's good for the UK?
Because I said to you, I felt that your programme and your programme the other night and the last 3 days hasn't been objective in reference to the DUP. Now, if the DUP has an issue with you, that's up to the DUP. That's between you and the DUP. But it shouldn't be over the airwaves that the DUP, absolutely the whole country is against the DUP. And that's the way it's sounding in your programme and your programme the other night, because when you even have the other Ulster Unionist Party having a go at the DUP and that, and I'm no great supporter of the DUP, Stephen. I actually went to against them in their rallies when Paisley was here, and I went and done these. So I'm actually only thinking I'm flag waving
for
the DUP.
So can we talk about the substance of this, Jim? Because I'm really interested. Clearly what the DUP are saying, all right? The DUP are saying that they are trying to prioritise our trade with Great Britain, because that is the majority of our trade. That's the vast majority of it. And what this deal that the DUP are supporting it includes is an all-Ireland economic zone. All right. Now, that single market, Arlene Foster said, was a red line, that it would constitutionally threaten the UK. Now they're prepared to support it. As a unionist, tell me why you're comfortable with it. I'm trying to give you room and
Stephen,
space here.
Stephen, don't put words in my mouth.
Well, are you comfortable with it?
No, but I didn't. I told you there was things in it that I would be very, very uncomfortable with. But when you're negotiating and you want to try and give and take, and I listened to the Alliance yesterday, and all these people are... I mean, once proposals went on the table from the British government and the DUP supported them, then everybody in the world could not support it, because they were wanting to say no. You know, if we want to move on in this society and this country, we need to understand that there's things that we have to give and there's things that we have to take with each other. And it just seems to be that there's no leeway. And listen to your programme. I hear 90% or 95% of the people that's coming on being constantly having a go at the DUP or whatever. Now, you're not going to get everything you want. That was like the Belfast negotiations.
Can I tell you the irony?
We had to give a lot.
Sure.
Loyalism, unionism had to give a lot.
Can I tell you the irony, Jim, about your argument this morning? Here I am essentially trying to push in to explaining why you support the DUP's position.
I didn't say I supported the
DUP. Well, exactly. And here you
you're
are.
You're putting words into my mouth.
No, but here you... Look, you're criticising me for not bringing enough people on supporting the DUP. And when I get a hint that you may be supporting them, when I say, please, Jim, tell us why you support the BBC's deal, the DUP's deal, you're telling us you're not sure whether you do or not. So what do you want me to do?
Yes,
invent these people?
No, Stephen, no. Yeah, but I can assure you...
Do you support the proposal or not?
I think that when you get to the point where it is acceptable that people want to look into it and see what it possibly needs twerked here and there, and at the end of it, not every loyalist and unionist would be happy with the deal and that down the board, down the REC, because that's one of the things that was in the backstop that we didn't want. But the thing about that is that it can be moved, and whenever all the negotiations are done, it can be moved. In the backstop, the original backstop from Theresa May, we were locked in for as long as the EU and the Irish Republic wanted us to be locked into that, with no way out, no reason to get out of it. Now, this deal here, we can get out of it in the sense
that...
That's
correct, and that flips that on the head. That is absolutely correct. That flips that completely. The DUP would have to... Well, if it was accepted, the DUP would have to consent to it, and that's one of the fundamental differences now between this proposal and Theresa May's
backstop. But is that not movement from the DUP, from what their red lines were? And is that not, when people are turning around and being critical, is that not a point where people should say, well, hold on, they have moved? But I think your programme and others have been criticising them for now moving to try and get some sort of agreement and deal to make the economy better here and to keep us going while these deals are getting made between the British government and the EU.
Jim Wilson,
and that's the point. The point about it is that there's the timescale that's going to happen over.
I wonder, could we all have a listen to this next? This was the Conservative MP, James Gray, speaking to Adam Bolton on Sky News yesterday.
Who does it benefit? I mean, surely the whole point of Brexit is we're going to be better off. And if you're in Northern Ireland, you're not going to be better off. You're going to face two borders in trade of one kind or another.
Well, you face borders if you do trade around the world, wherever that might be.
Well, you don't at the moment.
But we'd be much better off because if we get the deal, we'd have left. And that's the important thing. We'd have achieved Brexit. We'd have achieved the 17.4 million people.
But I'm saying, to what end? What would
be
achieved by it?
The United Kingdom would then be free. We'd make our own, trading agreements.
Not the people of Northern Ireland, though. Because they're going to have two borders. They're going to have an enhanced border between the island of Britain and Ireland, and they're going to have new borders between North and South, which they don't have.
Every 4 years, of course, they can make up their own minds on that. And no deal in this world happens without some pain for some people.
Well, no deal in this world happens without some pain for some people. Well, let's get reaction to that from Dr. Jennifer Cassidy, politics lecturer at Oxford University. Morning to you, Jennifer.
Morning, thank you for having me.
And thank you for waiting. And the member of the Northern Ireland Conservatives, Frank Shivers. Morning to you, Frank.
Good morning.
Good morning. Great. Jennifer, what's your take on this in terms of the impact in Northern Ireland?
Well, particularly regarding the statement or the interview that we've just heard, when I saw that live being played yesterday, I had to stop it and replay it a number of times to really comprehend what I was hearing. Although I have known for the last 3 years that Northern Ireland clearly is not a priority for Westminster or the Tory government, you know, we have gotten to the point now where it's just being so open and blatant in these words that, you know, there's no deal without some pain for some people. And that is just shocking in itself. And when we get to the point of that type of language being normalised, the implications for that as a whole are not looking good, in my opinion, to say the least.
Well, can you make this real for people in Northern Ireland? How will it affect Northern Irish lives? In what way, in your view?
So in both my personal and professional opinion, we're constantly just being told by the politicians the economic side. Now, regarding the economic side, we've already seen the response from the majority of Northern Irish businesses saying they would be deeply impacted by this, by both at the border on the Irish Sea and the customs checks, customs points, whatever you want, symbolism or language you want to put on that. But let's also not forget, and something that I always wish to highlight, you know, my grandparents lived kilometres from the border, my mother grew up kilometres from the border, the social, cultural and political impact that any kind of customs checks or any kind of symbolism of a return to a border will have on the island of Ireland. It's simply not just about economics. And that the failure of Westminster, or perhaps the strategic use or dismissing it for their own political gain, is unforgivable, in my opinion, as the implications, as I said, are going to be extremely strong. And whether they know it or whether they're choosing to dismiss it is beyond the remit of that. It will have deep consequences.
Frank Shivers?
Well, Stephen, I think it's important for me to say I'm talking on a personal basis here, but I think people are getting fed up that language is continually used as a political weapon by the Liberal left. The Liberal left seem to think that they can use and make wild statements constantly, but the minute we get a lazy language statement from and let's be honest, it's a backbencher MP from Wiltshire who... I'd hazard a guess, I tried to get him yesterday, but I'd hazard a guess he's never actually been to Northern Ireland before. And all of a sudden the media are all over it. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, he's a Tory MP.
And
he is a Tory MP, but as I say, he's a backbencher. He's from Wiltshire.
What doesn't make sense?
Well, it doesn't make sense that the likes of the BBC and Sky and whatnot would pick up on this. I would call it lazy language. I also think that potentially there is in every deal and every, you know, certainly in Brexit, there's going to be pain for people. There is, we've had pain. We're continually paying because we're paying into the EU and not getting the same amount of money or more out. So that there's pain for the whole of the United Kingdom, for the people of the United Kingdom.
Dr. Cassidy?
Well, to respond to saying that it's just one backbencher, that I think that point is mute in the respect that we've seen Johnson himself say 2 weeks ago when he was told how many border points crossings there actually were, over 500, that he didn't realise the situation was that complex. We've heard the comments we all know from Priti Patel regarding actually the halting of food. We've heard Dominic Raab openly admit that he didn't read the Good Friday Agreement before negotiating with the withdrawal agreement. So this is not just one backbencher. This is trickled down from the top level. Oh, we've also heard Jacob Rees-Mogg, a key figure in the Brexit negotiations, say that why would he visit Northern Ireland? What would he learn from it that he couldn't learn from books?
So this we've had hundreds trickled. Of... We've had hundreds of statements from previous MP, previous prime ministers, including Boris Johnson, to say that the union is safe under a Conservative government. He reiterated that at the party conference this week, several times, including the Northern Ireland reception, also at the DUP reception at the Conservative Party conference, and in several other.
But how can you believe anything he says? Actions regarding Johnson has made a career about knowing what to say, when to say it, who to say it, and in what room to say it in.
We have not politics?
No, there's a spectrum on this. I completely agree with you there. That is, and most politicians do not live up to what they say. But regarding Johnson, he is an enigma. So he, regarding taking his word and using it as, you know, a blatant statement to say, well, he said X, so therefore we should believe Y. If he is at the other end of the spectrum where he said X, we should be very wary of what Y could be.
Well, I don't know. I'm a bit old-fashioned. You know, when the Prime Minister tells me to her face in a number of receptions that the union is safe under him as Prime Minister, I take him on his word until he proves otherwise. And I also think that, that the DUP leadership are of the same opinion. You know, there was 100% support for the union right across the board. And when you speak to ordinary rank and file Conservatives in the mainland, again, they're concerned about the union and its potential breakup, including Scotland.
Yes, I agree with you there regarding the union itself. But I'm talking here about I'm not talking about a united Ireland or a breakup of the union, but I'm talking about the implications for the region of Northern Ireland if the new deal was to go ahead, or if a no deal was to come into effect. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, let's be honest. The Prime Minister, his feet were put to the fire to bring out what his vision of a deal was. So you've got the EU very in transit in their trench, saying that is the only deal that we're going to. With Theresa May's deal is the only deal that we've agreed. But you give us your idea of it. He's now published that. So the logical situation is going to be we're going to fall somewhere in between, hopefully.
No.
If the EU want the deal and genuinely want the deal, that's where we're heading.
Well, the EU clearly want a deal because they negotiated a 590-page withdrawal agreement, and Ireland, the Republic itself, spent close to over 2 years dedicating their time, resources, agenda-setting powers and diplomatic staff in order to negotiate and get a deal. And so when we could have been...
Yeah, but it wasn't a deal that was acceptable to the British people or the Parliament.
Could the Irish government not be slightly more flexible or a lot more flexible, Jennifer?
But
them intransigent.
Yes, which is the irony of that statement is beyond actually belief.
The DUP have moved in their stance, so don't get me wrong, I'm not a lover of the DUP, but they've moved in their stance to try and get a deal.
Yes,
Ireland haven't.
Yes, but Ireland has already agreed to the, as I said, the 590 withdrawal agreement. They've already agreed to many aspects, all in the political declaration that we didn't cease to
We could, of course. Yeah, we could talk about this all day long. Dr. Jennifer Cassidy and Frank Shivers, thank you.